Welcome to Cheers to This, the podcast where meaningful conversation is mixed with a good drink. I'm your host, Jay Hutchins, and today I'm joined by Teddy, who understands the unique ways that your voice can be found through the lens of heritage. We welcome you to grab a glass and join the conversation with us. Hi, Teddy. How's it going?
It's going well. Thanks for having me, Jay.
Well, Teddy, I'm so happy to have you here today. But before we get going, there's a super important question I have to ask you. What's in your glass?
I've got some Dr. Pepper.
I love a good Dr. Pepper. I mean, I'm from Texas, so it's a staple around here. Well, I'm going to be toasting it up with a nice guava margarita. So we're going to get it going.
That sounds good.
So, Teddy, do you have anything to cheers to today?
I do. Cheers to our ancestors for forging the path we're on, and for Google Maps for setting us straight in the right path.
Absolutely. To our ancestors and to Google Maps. Cheers.
Cheers.
So, you know, we've got ancestors and Google Maps, but I'm curious about voices, actually. So, Teddy, when was the moment you first felt that undeniable pull that your heritage was actually trying to speak through you? I'm curious.
That's a really great question. You know, I feel like since I was a kid, I've always felt like my voice could be a powerful one and one that could be used to enact change and educate others. And I've always tried using my voice to be an advocate for the community I'm in. And it wasn't until, I'd say, late college or after undergrad that I decided to focus specifically on my heritage and who I am. And I think within the last year and a half, too, my voice has become even more powerful. I've kind of really zeroed in on advocacy around Native issues. And that, I think, is just driven by the times we live in and the need in many communities for more education around our issues.
I love that you said that you zeroed in on it. When you say that you zeroed in, what actually, you know, drove you to zero in? There is a broad range of issues you could have focused on. You know, was there a moment that you said, I have to do it right now because this is the moment?
I think there's a mix of things. I live in Denver and have been working with this kind of unofficial group of urban natives here in the city who are trying to enact change. And really, I was voluntold to use my voice in that way. That is, I think, in many communities that happens. But I really think that this year there was a pretty big legislative issue here in the state of Colorado that I was like very passionate about. I got myself in trouble around it, but it was at that point where I was like, I need to use my voice to educate as much as I can and bring the issues that don't normally see the light of day to light. And yeah, so I think there's a variety of issues behind that. I think obviously we're in a time of heavy erasure around not only Native issues, but anything that is non-white. And so I don't think there's enough Native voices speaking and advocating in the way that we need. And if I can use my voice to do that, then I'm going to.
Yeah, that's absolutely powerful to recognize that your voice holds that weight. And I actually love that voluntold moment where you recognize that there's something special about you, but you're in a community with others that see that spark in you too. And I think that's something special, you know, in our communities that we're in, you know, where people see something in you and they're like, no, here's that little nudge that you kind of need sometimes to step over that comfort zone, maybe, you know, or step out of that comfort zone. So I kind of love that.
Yeah.
So when you got that little bit of a nudge and you recognized that your own voice was there, did you have to make some mental shifts of your own? Like, was there a moment where you kind of had to do maybe a little bit of grieving of an older version of yourself that didn't maybe align with who you crafted from the pieces of your heritage and your vision of who you might have been outside of that?
You know, I think that that process happened after the fact. I didn't really process. I kind of dove straight off the deep end and was speaking and meeting with legislators and doing all these TikTok videos. And it wasn't until I think I overdid it that I had to stop, reflect, and figure out, okay, what do I need to do to take care of my own mental health and well-being while also doing something that I'm super passionate about? It's really hard to say no in an advocacy role. And it's not even an official role. It's just a volunteer type of thing. And it's especially difficult when you also face some interpersonal drama within the community that you have to overcome. It's not easy. And so it was at that point where I was like, I've had enough with this, that I almost was like, I'm just done. And I took that step back. I reflected. I did have that sort of grief moment of like, one, I was still grieving, in a sense, the person I used to be at 110 pounds heavier. I never had stopped and taken time to grieve that person. Then I was also grieving the person who didn't advocate and didn't speak and was taking the easy way out, so to speak. So I took that time. I reflected. I just rested. And I think that was super important for me. And it helped me refocus on what I wanted to actually do. And that was super helpful for me. And now I'm even more driven than I was before. I have specific goals in mind for myself and for our community. And that is an even more powerful position to be in.
What did that rest actually look like for you? Was it basically a cocoon where you just had to go find a blanket and a dark hole? Or was it getting a good book and like finding some focus? What did that look like?
Yeah, it was a little bit of a lot of different things. I had, you know, maybe a week or so where I was just like entrapping myself in my bed and not leaving, and then reading books. Is I love reading. Right now, I've just been doing audiobooks in the car rides, in my commute to work, to and from work. Love that. And then just surrounding myself with good people and talking with my best friend and my husband and my parents, who are always supportive. And that's kind of what that looked like for me.
I love that you were able to be poured back into, because a lot of the advocacy work is obviously pouring into the community and pouring into spaces. So that reminder that you had to be poured back into, that's important in the work that you're doing. And that, so I really respect that. You know, you said that you found a new space for your voice and a new focus and your goals. You know, you don't just do the advocacy work where you're, you know, rallying the community, and, you know, you don't just do the advocacy work where you, you know, do the Native work where you put out the Native voice, you know, where you like bring attention to Native issues, but you are, you do, you know, major work with actual Native art as well. You know, like you're like in all these different spaces, like it, like it's really woven into your life. So I'm curious, like when you create, speak, or perform publicly today, you know, which traditions or values would you say are actually shaping your tone and your message the most?
That's a great question. First, I'll say I am not an artist. I would like to be, but I enjoy Native art and I value it, and I support it in whatever way I can. And, you know, I've just been trying to collect as much as I can and try to like give a platform to Native artists who aren't getting the platform they deserve. I'm in a very strange place because I didn't grow up in my community. I grew up outside of it. I didn't really reconnect until my 20s with my culture and my community, and I kind of really went heavy into it. And I guess that's kind of the lens I come from, is who my people are, who my ancestors are. I think it's important for people to know that every tribe is different in the way that they are culturally. We aren't just this monolith as Native people. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that do cross over, but my culture is very different from a Lakota person's culture, and that's very different from a Haida person's culture in Alaska. I think that is something that I've been trying to work on educating others on. And as long as I stay true to that in the way that I speak and how I speak, I think that also naturally comes out.
I think you do a really good job of making sure that Native culture isn't flattened. And you do a really good job of saying, hey, it's from this culture that I'm getting this information. Hey, it's from this tribe that is being affected. You know, you're making sure that you highlight where it's from, who it's being affected specifically. You do a really good job of doing that. And I respect that. And I think it's important that people know who is directly affected. And so I can't speak specifically and say, you know, I can't say thank you, obviously, but I can see the effort behind it is what I can say from the outside looking in. Like I can see effort. And what makes me curious about that effort, you know, when you were finding your voice and it looks very intentional, you know, is there a difference? You know, can you describe the difference in your voice now versus when you were initially finding it? Did you have to do additional work to make sure you didn't flatten the culture, or did it come naturally?
That is a tough question. I think I did do some work because I can't know everything about every tribe and every culture. 574 federally recognized tribes, and there's even more that aren't federally recognized, and each tribe has its own cultures. Knowing every single one is near impossible. Whenever I see something that I want to speak on, I take the time and the effort to educate myself, to connect with those who do have the information in the background, and then go from there. There is a sort of a piece of it that I think is natural, in that I know that it just is who I am and how I use my voice that I think helps draw people in. And from both from the side of who my viewers are, but also from the people I'm speaking to, my friends, family members who are helping me to better understand. So there's something natural about that, which I think is helpful to have. I'm grateful that I'm able to do that. I can't fully describe it.
It paints a picture of the work that you put in and of what does come innately for you, you know, because you make it look easy, which makes me a bit jealous of how easy you make things look, because you pick up things and you put things into place, into your activism and into your work. You know, like you put these pieces into place. I'm like, it makes sense that Teddy is doing this work. It makes sense that Teddy is speaking on this issue because his voice seems full and complex because it's part of his heritage. It's full and complex because his voice makes sense in this space. It all makes sense. It's like 1 + 1 does not equal 37, you know, because it all makes sense because your voice is full and complex. And I feel that every time that you bring something to the table, and is it meant to be that way? Is it meant to seem that way? Like, does it feel as natural as it looks from the outside?
No. There is a lot of work that goes into, like, every time I speak on something and crafting it in the way I want it to sound. That part doesn't, in a sense, it comes naturally because I know what I want it to look like and sound like. But there is work that gets done not only before I'm either filming or speaking, but then while I'm engaging either behind the camera or in front of an audience where I'm constantly thinking, okay, is this coming off how I want it to come off? How can I adjust in time to make sure that the audience is getting the message that I want them to get? It's easier when you're in front of people because you can read their faces and their body language to see, is this connecting with them? Behind the camera, it's a little tougher. I think every time that I film something, there's maybe 10 iterations of it where I'm going back through and re-editing and really making sure that I'm saying what I want to say and how I want to say it in the right way and that it's coming off the right way and I'm not saying anything that can be too divisive or incorrect. So yeah, it may come off easy, but it's definitely not.
How much of it is a baseline of respect and how much of it is a baseline of caution?
You know, I think that's changed a little bit. When I first started, a lot of it was a baseline of respect. And then I got into a place in the last few months where I was getting a lot of pushback from certain community members. And that now has me in a place of caution, even though the vast majority of our community has been super supportive. But I'm trying not to add to the already existing drama that has occurred. So a lot of it now is being cautious and not stepping on toes. And a part of me is angry at myself for letting that happen. A lot of it is still very fresh. And I've been giving myself time to sort of heal from that. And I think I'm back at a point after the last month and a half where I'm like, okay, I'm back into it. It doesn't need to be a caution anymore. Those very few community members who have been very vocal don't deserve the time in my head that I've given them.
You cannot let the entire show be managed by a few, basically, is what I'm hearing.
Yes. Yep. And I was letting them do that. And then I have been fighting back because it's not fair to me or to the community who deserve the advocacy that we've been doing. Not letting them change the narrative around that.
Yeah. Speaking of narratives, when you think of the connection you've actually made to your heritage, what have you gained the most from it personally?
I don't know if I've... That's a tough question. I think I have gained some really, really, really strong relationships with community members that I wouldn't have otherwise. And these are, it was like, it went from 0 to 100 with those relationships. And they are so powerful and so fulfilling. And I think that is the thing that I've gained the most is those relationships and those supporters and allies that I wouldn't have otherwise. But the heart work that we do is also so self-fulfilling. Before the last year and a half, I was working in corporate America, not doing anything that was fulfilling myself and my soul. And so doing this it's made me happier. It is that self-fulfillment that I've been seeking for a long time. So I think those are the primary things that I've gained here.
It sounds like you found the work that has lit your soul aflame.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, a lot of people try to find that kind of connection with their heritage that you found. They try to find that voice and they stumble, they fall, they miss the connection somehow. What mistake do you see people make the most when they try to establish that connection with their own heritage and they kind of fail?
I think the biggest mistake I see, and I've seen this just a few times, is people who try to speak on behalf of their heritage rather than in support of. There's a fine line between the two where you may think that you're speaking in support of your heritage and your culture and who you are, but from your audience's perspective and from your community's perspective, all they're seeing is someone who's speaking on behalf of them and not bringing them into the conversations and bringing them to the table and having hard conversations with them. I think a lot of times people feel left out. And if you're not making them feel included, then that's where you're going to start stumbling, especially for those of us who aren't living on, and this is a very specific thing to Native people. A lot of us don't live on reservation areas, but there's a split between communities, urban and rural, where those who are living on the reservation are feel like they are experiencing, and they are to a certain extent, experiencing the harshest conditions for Native people. So coming in as an outsider who hasn't connect, who is just reconnecting with the culture, you have to be cautious and you have to be respectful and you have to take the steps to make sure you're engaging in the right way. And some people just come in hot and start speaking without listening. And that's an important step that you can't miss.
How fine is that line between speaking on behalf of the community and speaking in support of, like, and bringing people into the conversation? Because it seems like that line's pretty fine. Because way I picture it, it's the thinnest of dotted lines, the way I picture it in my head. Because when I see it happening, it's, you can step over that line pretty easily.
Yeah. It is very easy to step over that line. And sometimes, most of the times, you're not going to know it. And it's very difficult to define because every community is different. Every person within the community is different. And so you have to find the right balance for yourself to know and to be self-reflective to know, okay, am I stepping over the line for the majority of the community? Am I stepping over the line for a few of the community? And it's a very complex thing that you do have to reflect on. It's something that I continue to reflect on every time I speak or make a video. It's not an easy thing, but that line is so fine. I think there's an even higher fine line where you might even skip over the speaking for the or on behalf of the community, and you just go so far where you have now ostracized yourself from the community because of what you have said. And that's another fine line that you don't want to surpass. And I've seen one or two people who have done that. It's not ideal.
And some people find the line, jump rope on the line, step on the line, jump back across the line, over, under, onto the side of the line. Be careful out there.
Yep.
Be very careful here. I was just curious, you know, what's the most unexpected lesson you've learned when finding your voice?
Yeah, I think there's a common theme where I thought that when I was going to speak, I would have the support of so many people within the community. And this situation where the very few, very vocal people took the steps to try and silence me was very unexpected. It was disheartening. And it's a lesson that I realized where I realized that I, one, couldn't let them impact what I was doing and how I was doing it. But I realized, I do have to make the choice of who I let in and who I can trust. I thought that I could trust a lot of people, and I thought that I could be supported and support others in that way. But, I learned the hard way that I needed to be very specific and very targeted in the way that I involve others in the work that I do.
That seems like it's a really tough lesson. And it seems like it could be awfully discouraging. It sounds very discouraging. How does it stop you from not being in the fight?
Well, it hasn't. It did, but it hasn't overall. So at the time, I took a step back and I was like, I'm done. I don't want to do this if these, I don't want to say these people, but these people are going to keep talking poorly about me and write posts about me and involve like formal media organizations in a way that is harmful to both myself. So I took a step back for like a few days, and then so much outpouring of support from a vast majority of the community who encouraged me to keep going was huge. And I was like, okay, yeah, I am doing the right thing here. The community is supporting me. I can't stop here. And so I think it's strengthened my resolve, and I'm even more encouraged to do the things that I want to be doing for the community. And I'm not going to stop. Someone's going to have to force me to stop. It's not going to happen.
So it sounds like your voice is stronger than ever.
Yeah, I would say so. And I think not only in the strength of my voice, but in the way that I'm carrying my voice. I used to take a step back with my voice. I felt like I could say what I needed to say. I could hold back in other ways. And I'm realizing that I don't need to hold back. Because by holding back, I'm holding knowledge back that is necessary for change and to be a strong advocate for the community. And that is incredibly important in the fight that we are having. So I'm not going to hold back anymore. And so I think there's both the strength in my voice, but then in the strength of what I'm saying has changed.
That is absolutely profound. So, Teddy, I do have another question for you, if I may.
Yeah.
Where the heck can people find you and your work?
Well, I'm all over the place. I am on TikTok and Instagram primarily, if you want to follow some of the video work that I'm doing. I have a Substack channel called The Native Ledger. There's a website you can go to. It's nativeledger.com, or just, you know, if you find me, my usernames for nearly everything is MCC Teddy. So just Google me also. You can find me easily that way. But
yeah. Awesome. Well, I would like to go ahead and offer one more cheers, if I may.
Absolutely.
I would like to offer a cheers to finding our voice, a voice to those that have not found one yet. But if they do find it, and when they find it, may be found in the voices of our ancestors who have fought hard, and they fought hard through perils and time.
Cheers to that.
And thank you so much for being here, Teddy, for sharing your story. And thank you for all of our listeners for tuning in today. And this has been Cheers to This.